Let's talk about the long-term plan and what's happening with that, because I was reading the front page of the Waikato Times and the arguments they're having at Hamilton City at the moment. They've already got a huge amount of debt, and they keep lifting their debt limits, and they're talking about lifting them again, because now that we have some idea of what the government's doing instead of Three Waters, they're like, we're going to need more money just to do the normal things we do. As well as that, I emailed Waka Kotahi and got a message back this week. Just, I wanted to know about the Greenslade Road intersection, because a lot of people don't like how fast that is. They're moving so slowly on changing the speed limits on State Highway 23. But they also said basically a similar thing, like the government's going to change their roading priorities. We don't know what they are. So there's a lot of stuff, because we've got a new government, and I don't know what it's normally like, but they don't seem to have plans, and they seem to be making it up on the fly. Maybe I'm being a bit unfair, but in any case, there's a lot of unknowns. So what is Waikato District Council doing with all those unknowns, and the fact that normally by end of June, you would have your rates rise set and your spending plan for the next 10 years set?
That's right, because as you know, the long-term plan is the mechanism with which we do our budgetary planning and our project planning for, I mean, it's forecast for 10 years, but as we know, lots can happen in that 10 years. So it's a chunk of 3 years out of that 10 years. So it's really looking at the 3 years of the long-term plan. And like Hamilton and we were saying just before we went on air, all councils are challenged by what's happening with central government at the moment, the uncertainty around the Three Waters provisions, giving that back to council control. And we already know that those are huge cost implications for our communities in Waikato District. And like Hamilton, we too are grappling with those uncertainties for our long-term planning, scheduling, and our Three Waters. We can't really compare a city council with a district council because, A, we are much bigger in terms of the area that we service. We've got a completely different roading network, and we have a number of wastewater treatment plants as opposed to just one wastewater treatment plant. So we serve the many. So the implications of changes to the Three Waters reform is huge for us, and the same with the uncertainty around the amount of funding from Waka Kotahi to council for our roading network. So that's another big uncertainty. We've got council meetings next week on the 28th and 29th, where we'll be discussing these in a lot more detail. Obviously, our staff and governance, those of us who are councillors, we've been working on the long-term plan for a good period of time to get to this point. And now to have that added uncertainty, you know, with what we know will cause rate rises. I mean, we already knew that our rates would increase just to continue the business as usual, and looking at those implications, what that looks like. So we'll be discussing these issues in detail next week, actually, Aaron, like I said, on the 28th and 29th. Yeah, it's uncertain times in local government, and we know, and I think Angela O'Leary said this on a Facebook post earlier this week about the rating system is broken, but we have nothing else to work with in terms of being able to continue doing the work that we need to do on our essential infrastructure, our wastewater, our roads, our parks and reserves, all of that. So it is challenging.
So can you delay the LTP? Can you do that?
There are different options that we need to consider, but we still have to go out on the 1st of July with the rates for the following year. So because business continues regardless of all of the up in the air uncertainties, life in council and the expectations for us to deliver on the services that we provide, we have to continue.
One of the issues that they talked about, and one of the things that got lost, completely lost in the Three Waters debate, and I really do blame Labor for not handling that debate very well, was that the whole...
Or being clear.
The whole point of the initial point of what they were doing was to create, they call it balance sheet separation. Basically, the councils can't raise enough money to maintain and upgrade Three Waters to modern standards for over the next, I don't know, decades, I guess.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So they had to create these different entities. And also because of the type of neoliberal governments we have, this is a bit of an aside, but they didn't want to put it on the government books either because that would have looked bad and they would have been Labour, they're scared of being accused of spending too much money. So they created these other entities and then the whole co-governance issue got in and shoehorned in there.
And that belief that somehow we will be privatising, you know, the assets that, you know, the ratepayers had paid for over time as well. So it was a whole mishmash of... The intent was really good. We know that we needed Three Waters reform, but no government had been brave enough to actually take that step and address that.
Yeah.
Because there's inequities in the provision of that. If there are communities who are on a reticulated system and they're still having boil water notices, you know, and I think I said this last year, there were 80-plus communities across New Zealand who had to have boiled notices.
Oh, I know, yeah.
You know, for fresh water when you're turning on your tap. So those things. And, of course, Havelock North had, with the implications of what happened there with their water contamination, really spearheaded the reforms in a way. But it wasn't articulated that well. And then when you have a story that people don't understand and then it's hijacked by other fear-mongering around co-governance, you know, that it would be privatised, all of that sort of stuff. The story gets lost around why we really needed that.
Yeah.
And now we're in, I guess, a hiatus. Again, waiting for government now to come forward with not only that we're repealing, but what are you going to replace it with other than saying local water's done better. You know,
yeah, and they seem to be saying we're giving control back to the councils.
But we're not giving, but what financial support we'll give is question.
They
you know,
seem
question
to be saying, I'm trying to remember what I read, they seem to be saying, well, the councils could group together.
Yeah, exactly,
and do
like
stuff.
Have entities.
But then that was the issue. They'd say things like Canterbury Council won't want to have Westland joined in with them because they'll be a dead weight as far as they're concerned.
And
so,
there's inequities built into that. And you've got to have an appetite where councils want to work together. And, you know, we are different entities from a city council to a provincial to a rural. You know, and I guess we're lucky at Waikato District Council in terms of the waters reform because we had already embarked on that journey to work with
Water care
to provide our water services. So we've become used to that relationship and we know that it's been working.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the parties on the right found a stick to beat Labour with that was going to be useful for them, make good for them at the election. It doesn't look like they've had a firm plan of what to actually do with the issue.
The reality,
and I'm not sure some of them.
Is.
I'm not sure some of them even knew there was an issue. Unfortunately, so I'm sure local government in New Zealand will be telling their minister, "We've got a real problem here."
We've got a real problem here.
I don't have a lot of confidence in the minister myself, but
well, when you look at the hut, you know, and they're looking at a 17% rates increase just to help with the infrastructure that they're having problems with their water.
Down in Wellington.
Yeah. You know, with their water infrastructure. And I'd hate to think what the bill would be for Wellington City Council, you know, with all of the problems that they're having. But it's a challenge for all councils, providing that infrastructure that's fit for purpose, but also that you can future-proof it for the years to come.
Yeah,
it comes at
okay.
a cost.
So you guys are still, maybe in a week or so, you might have a clearer idea of what you're going to try and do with this mess.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah, and we'll be discussing that robustly next week.
Robustly. Okay.
Which we always do, which is great, actually. You know, that's what you're in, well, that's what you're in council for when you've got 14 different people with different views. You can have robust discussions and that's part
actually,
of the debate.
It's usually when
it's healthy.
These stressful things are happening that you get the disagreements. That's usually what triggers it, yeah. Okay, let's talk about wastewater. We've had well, it's, I'm going to be straight up, Rāpuriri on Facebook and in the Waikato Times saying a lot of things about the wastewater system and sort of implications that it's dangerous. And we've had some response from the experts within council. Can we sum that up? Or do you want to say your thoughts on this?
Well, it's misleading and it's dangerous narrative, you know, when it's so ill-informed. And the narrative is wrong. And so I was actually quite shocked by the article that was in the Times and how inaccurate the information was there. And to say that people swim, fish, paddle and kite surf in the mixed soup of seawater and treated sewage from the outlet pipe on the outgoing tide daily. I mean, that in itself, that statement is incredibly misleading because it's implying that there's raw sewage that is being discharged at the discharge point.
So the use of the word sewage is not correct.
It's effluent.
Yeah.
And, you know, the total discharge is treated effluent. It's not treated sewage. There's quite a difference to that. You know, sewage is wastewater that typically comes from out of your bathroom or your kitchen, your laundry, and it carries everything, you know, urine, feces, kitchen and laundry waste. You know, so it's something no one wants, but we don't do that out of the discharge pipe. It's treated effluent. The water residue left over from after it's being processed through the wastewater treatment plant. You know, so solids, rags, greases and oils have been removed. And organics, E. coli and some of the pathogens as well have been reduced to levels that are deemed suitable to be released safely into the receiving environment. You know, none of us want a discharge into our moana, you know, and we've had this discussion and, you know, Aaron, you've been on top of this over the last 4 years that we've been investigating the options for a better quality of discharge effluent. And, you know, I attended the Water Governance Board's hui last Friday, which actually are open, and it's always interesting. So they spoke about Raglan, and that actually work has begun on the treatment plant upgrade. And that's going to cost, you know, something around the $26 million mark.
So this is separate to land-based treatment. This is just the treatment, at the current plant.
At the current plant.
There's going to be a higher standard, high-quality output.
It's a whole upgrade of the entire wastewater treatment plant. So by June next year, because it's on track for the works to be completed, by June next year, 2025, we'll have a completely new wastewater treatment plant.
It's only next year. So I saw that number, 2025, and in my head that was way off in the distance.
But I thought that's years and years away, but actually we're on track to have the new wastewater treatment plant up and running by June 2025, all going well. So that will treat the process of that waste that's going into that plant and treat it to a much higher standard than what it is now.
We should also mention that Waikato Times actually had to retract some of what they published.
They did, because it was really poor journalism, and our main comms guy, John, was just completely horrified by the inaccuracies and the airtime they'd given to Rāpuriri, actually. So if you want actual factual information, you know, you're more than welcome to contact me. You can also go onto the Raglan Wastewater Treatment Plant page via Waikato District Council's website. All of the recordings of our monthly Zoom hui are on there. You can also see what is intended for the wastewater treatment plant. And you're more than welcome to attend the wastewater Zoom huis, which happen once a month. And I'll be posting that information up for the next hui. And the one that we had this month, in February, I only had one community member in attendance.
Probably
and the
John
rest,
Lawson, was it?
It was.
Yeah,
and the
John.
Rest was all the water experts, myself and Eugene Patterson, who's my fellow councillor, and Mike Keir, who's another one of my fellow councillors. So I really encourage people, if you want to know the facts, go onto that page, give me a call, and attend the Zoom hui where you can actually ask staff. And we've got, you know, the water care staff as well as our water staff in-house questions, and regional councillor in attendance there. And we've got nothing to hide, actually.
The thing that concerns me is there are real problems, or there have been real problems, and they get lost in the misleading problems that aren't
real problems. And the narrative that's misleading
and my concern, my concern is that council staff and water care staff will just stop taking the community seriously because it's just a barrage of
no,
of
they
nonsense.
Actually do. They are very, you know, our staff are really, this is their job and they want to do better and they've got nothing to hide. And, you know, they want to work with not only the Raglan community but other communities like Te Kauwhata, for example, Huntly, Ngārua Wāhia, Meremere, for example. You know, and actually next week, on the 28th, we've got a trip to the Te Kauwhata wastewater treatment plant to see that upgrade actually in action. So that's going to be really interesting.
So that's going to be the same as what's happening here?
Some of what's there. It'll be more like the Meremere wastewater treatment plant, and which is awesome as well. It's a little bit different at Kauwhata.
So the last thing I also read about what's happening with the land-based proposal here is that there is now a memorandum of understanding signed with the landowners up on Mangatawhiri Road,
that's right,
and that they're still investigating using the Wainui Reserve. So has there been any progress on that since the most recent meeting?
I'm aware that our water care, our water staff were up on site at Wainui Reserve yesterday.
Yeah.
So I've yet to hear back
that
feedback.
Yeah.
So no doubt we'll get an update on that, of course, but they'll be able to share that with us at our next Zoom hui at the end of this month, was it in March actually, but I'll keep you posted will be updated. And also you can go onto the Water Governance Board and you can see the agenda information there and the reports on various actions. And actually just to note, Aaron, Matt Telfer from Watercare talked about the they've CCTV'd all the wastewater network in Raglan.
Yeah,
you know, particularly after the community hui we had last year and the testing that came back by the museum around the high levels of.
We had a couple of rogue spikes. Rogue. They were strange. There was two spikes with nothing either side. Extremely high levels of something toxic. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, E. coli, I think it was. That was in there. And so we've CCTV'd all the wastewater network in Raglan to see if there were any links out of our network, and there's not. So the next step, and Garth Dibley from the Governance Board was actually really asked the hard questions of Watercare, and he said, well, Dennis Amor highlighted that there could be old pipes coming from Stewart Street that are just charging into that area by the museum. Have you investigated that? And Matt hadn't followed that up. So Garth was very direct and saying you need to follow it up with Dennis and we need to investigate that more.
And that's the trouble with underground stuff. It's so blimmin' hard. I used to work in the building industry and we'd draw up plans, and all the plans we knew were, this is exactly what we want, except the services underground, we knew that they were just a suggestion, and it was not until the guys got in and dug things up and found out where the pipes actually were and found new problems that we knew what the work would be. So it's they're in the dark a little bit with this, which is frustrating because
but in our wastewater network there are no leaks from the
Okay, all right, let's move on to something else. I don't know if you saw, but I caught sight of a subdivision plan for the Koning Farm, 400 sections going in there. And I had a chat with the real estate agent who's actually in Morrinsville who's handling that. And for people who've seen the plans, hopefully it's on our Facebook. I haven't even looked.
And it was in the paper.
It's mostly going to be like you can see, but there's arguments about between Rangatahi and this development about where because the backstory is there's plans one day, hopefully, to have a bypass road that goes around the back of Rangitahi from maybe to from Mangatawhiri Road, somewhere around there on State Highway 23. No one really knows yet. Back round Rangitahi
and through
round Rangitahi meets Tuhutawai Road by Extreme Waste.
Yeah, and then through to
Wainui.
And that's the future state. So I saw that. I actually asked a question of staff, but I haven't had a response back about what you've just talking about. But we've known that the Konings have wanted to subdivide for many years.
Yeah.
This isn't something that's come out of the blue.
No.
And, you know, it will have to no doubt go through the district plan.
The last district plan was changed so their farm was zoned residential.
Yes.
So it's all within that
context.
But with
two developers, you know, those are actions that will need to be undertaken through there. But also it needs resource consent. There's a lot that has to happen
they
in
don't
order
even know
for
who,
that
who's
to happen
did,
or
sorry.
Yeah, where the road's going to come out. So there's all of that. So at the moment, it's a plan on paper.
The thing that was frustrating for me, and I know it's frustrating for like you and Dennis, the community board chair, is that there's no overarching plan for Raglan, and so it's left the developers to kind of argue over where it's going to happen.
And
through,
where do we lead,
through in the context of the council regulations, but and I don't object to the developers. They're doing what they're doing, but the community should be in charge of the overall structure of Raglan. And, you know, there's good people and experts involved in trying to make it happen, but there's also developers saying, well, this is best for my development, and the other developers saying, well, this is best for my development. And that's to be expected, but it's not, you know, when is our council going to give us a structure plan, I guess, something like
that's,
that.
That's the magical question. I can't answer that.
It's probably too late, is it?
Yeah,
also?
Maybe not too late, but maybe not a structure plan, but maybe, for want of a better word, I can't think of it right now,
one of the council staff was suggesting there's other plans like they did for Pōkeno up north.
And if you have a transport
more of
plan,
a concept plan,
all of those sorts of things. So just changing that. But, you know, we have, and it was one of Bob's bugbears too about having a structure plan.
Bob McLeod,
for Raglan as well.
I was going to say to his dying day. That sounds heavy.
But it was. He was so passionate right through to the end about Raglan.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing too, of course, is if there's 400 houses in that plan, and there's 500 at Rangitahi coming online way faster than we anticipated 10 years ago, and more behind that, putting your Raglan Area School Board of Trustees hat on, what the heck?
What the heck? I know. It would have to trigger another school.
I know. I'm thinking of messaging the Ministry of Education and saying, are you guys on top of this yet?
Yeah. You know, it would have to trigger another school, and there's a number of opportunities. Could it be a Kura Kaupapa? That's the other school. You know, there's lots of opportunities perhaps to investigate what education might look like in Raglan in the next 20 years or 30 years. So
is the area school talking to the ministry about this? Is the ministry very aware?
Well, you know, we had to put in our zoning for the school, you know, so we've capped it at 1,000 students. So
right. And what is it at the moment?
Close to 600.
Okay, all right. So that's still room for a lot.
But it's,
and even that, where you going to put them all, Lisa?
Yeah, that is the question. But, you know, we're doing a lot of property development around the school, and we've got a great property manager. So if you go up there, you see that there's always a lot going on. And I don't know if you've been up there recently, Aaron, but you'll see the big structure that's going over the outdoor basketball court.
Oh, I saw that on Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, so that's quite amazing. So that's happening. So we're certainly doing a lot of property planning up at school, but we are limited for space.
And parking.
And parking, which will always be, we can't create parking out of no parking. And I actually met a parent yesterday talking about travelling to and from school safely. And I put the challenge to her that, you know, we need a group of parents to actually get in behind that and do that planning, because the board doesn't have the capacity to do that.
Are you talking about things like walking buses or...?
Oh, we were talking about lots of things. What are the low-hanging fruit that we could possibly do? And she came up with, what if we put in a blue bike lane and just painted it down Norrie Ave, and, you know, so cars would have to slow down. It becomes effectively a one-way, so cars have to pull over to let the other car come and give priority to the cyclist, that sort of stuff. I thought that was a great idea. One was suggested one-waying of Norrie Ave.
Oh, boy.
These are just suggestions, blue sky thinking.
Yeah, okay. And yeah. We'll emphasise that, folks. This is not the councillor stating that.
No,
in the future.
it was just some of the ideas that we came up with, because another parent is concerned about the road safety on the main road and crossing. And I did ask staff about the cost of a raised platform of some sort on the main road. But we haven't factored that into the LTP, and this is
all about Raglan growing, and we need a future plan for how we're going to handle it.
Yeah.
So can people also pressure the council, ring the council instead of you, and say they want a future plan for Raglan?
They can. They can put in service requests and things like that.
Put in a service request for a structure plan.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
You know, all of those things come at a cost. But yeah, so there's lots happening.
Yeah. Now, former Deputy Mayor Axel Beck was ostensibly running for council in Hamilton, but you told me he was using it as a platform to talk about housing.
Yeah, he was using it as a platform to talk about housing, so people would go into their appetites would be raised, so they would then go. He used it as a cheaper platform to get advertising and to share a website that he's created, and I've just forgotten the name of it, where people can go in and look at it and find information about where you can and what you should be submitting to for housing.
Is this the Housing Czar?
That's it.
He's going to use the word that, okay. So the Housing Czar, C-Z-A-R. So it's just, it's www.housingczar.nz.
Yeah. And he's got, so on there, he's got the Future Proof Strategy, Hamilton City Council, what's inclusionary zoning, all of that. So it actually helps people if you want to make submissions or get information around housing. That's a really good portal. And speaking of which, you would be aware that we're working on our housing strategy for Waikato District Council. That's coming to the Sustainability and Wellbeing Committee on Monday for endorsement.
That's the committee you chair.
That's the committee that I chair. And so in that, we've got our housing strategy, so for council to endorse that. Some of the key factors are around affordable housing, Māori housing, intergenerational housing, all of those sorts of things. But underpinning the housing strategy is our action plan, which are the things that, what can we actually do as council,
That was going to be my question, because you can have great ideas, but the council is already limited financially, as we know through the Three Waters issues.
Yeah. So that, and we wanted it to be more of an enabler, and I guess it's more aspirational around what we can do. So, but that action plan underpins that. So it is looking at the opportunities for papakāinga, looking at the opportunities for on Māori land, looking at the opportunities to have inclusionary zoning.
Which means?
The inclusionary zoning, so in developments, so they have areas of affordable housing available. And, of course, affordable.
Yeah, what does that really mean these days?
Yeah, what does that really mean?
Yeah.
But at least we've got that mechanism. And we've got staff who are really passionate about that. So that's, if you want to check out our housing strategy, go into the District Council website, Sustainability and Wellbeing for Monday's Hui, and you'll see the draft. And we've already had great discussions in council about that. No doubt we'll have more on Monday, but you're more than welcome to go and read that.
What about, was there discussion about using council? So council has parcels of land and in places that sometimes we don't realise. Are there, although in the early 2000s and 90s there was a rush to sell all those off, and some of them were sold off.
We still do have council
can
land,
they,
but is
can
it
they
suitable?
Be used?
Yeah, It depends on where you're looking and what community and for what purpose, because we're also, you know, there's housing, but there's also the other needs on council land for sports fields, parks, all of those sorts of things. So we have a balancing of the use of the council land, but that is a consideration depending on the community.
Yeah, okay. And the sports field is a topical one, because I know there's talk about we do need more sports fields.
We do need more sports fields.
Should developers be providing green space? Is that in – I'll just ask this question now off the top of my head. Are they required to provide some green space in their developments?
Good planning, yes.
But then they're all on hills, so
– Yeah, so it just depends, it's you know. It is tricky. I mean, we can look at Pōkeno as an example of – development that didn't provide very good parks and reserves infrastructure.
I saw that stuff that's happened recently.
Yeah. You know, so we have to look at working with developers to include areas for green spaces. But sports fields, no, that's not a requirement of a development to have sports fields. And so that... Yeah, that's another challenge.
I know they've got green space, like Rangatahi's got lots of green
they've
space.
They've got lots of green
but
space, but it's
down
hilly.
Into the gullies,
yeah,
where
and
it's
hard hilly.
To build anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, looking at the opportunities that we have locally, and that opportunity, you know, one is Wainui Reserve. So, forward planning for what can be up at Wainui Reserve for the future as well, because it's already a public space.
Mm.
You know, and there's flat areas there. So what might that look like in the future?
Yeah. Now, one last question. I asked at the community board meeting if the community board was going to put a raft in the raft race. You were the only one that looked interested in the idea.
And that's as far as it's
gone.
That's
gone. As far as... I know, I was just...
I hope we get lots of rafts.
It was a cheeky question.
If I can actually muster the energy to get a raft in, we will endeavour to do so, Aaron.
2nd of March, you haven't got that long.
And I'm not a very good builder. And I did help my son and his friend with a raft one year, which was a bath. And then they ended up, having to get out and push it.
That's quite common. Yeah. When you watch the second half of the race and you come back in the shallows and there's a
so
lot of
my raft building skills aren't very good, and I don't know about my fellow
but that's why
boardies.
Honestly, if the community board made a raft that fell apart halfway around, people would love it.
They would love it. Hey, yeah. But I just wanted to touch on a few things that I've missed. So the keeping of animals bylaw
yeah.
pre-engagement survey is out now from the 19th of February to the 31st of March. So pop onto the council website to have a read of that. We haven't actually made too many changes from that bylaw from the previous time, but it is time for it to be out again. And we've also, I just wanted to put a little plug for our Waitangi Day exhibition. As you are aware, we had our Waitangi Day event here, and big thanks to you at the radio station. Be put on the spot to do
interviews
on
always,
the air.
I'll do interviews anytime. I love it.
But it was fantastic. And, you know, Marianne Tuol doing the filming of it.
Yeah, I don't usually
really
do it
great.
With the camera on me, I must admit.
Yeah, so we had such a great turnout for that day. People were really engaged with the information that we had. So we're doing... a condensed exhibition at the Old Art School starting from the 12th of March right through to the 28th of March. So we'll have comms going out, and thank you to Marky who did our posters and things like that. So that's on, and from 10 till 2 at the Raglan Old Art School in the exhibition room. And we're really lucky. We've already got bookings from Raglan Area School to come in. Pukitaha School is coming in, and we're taking activities.
They're out the other side of Hamilton, aren't they?
Yeah,
a little country
school.
They
were due to come in anyway. They were going to go to the museum, and they wanted to learn about the treaty, so it's perfect. So we're showing them some history videos, which are cool, from the Ministry of Education around the treaty, and they'll be going through our exhibition with activities. So that will be open to the community. So I really encourage... people to come along to that and learn. And then we've got our next community climate action story coming out next week as well on a local family. So that's another one.
Will that be that in the paper?
It will be
okay,
in the paper. Right. So that's something to look forward to as well. What else? And we're planning currently for Matariki Film Festival as well.
Okay.
Following on from Waitangi Day.
That's plenty.
Yes, we've got heaps going on. And we've got council next week. And for those of you who have had an invite to the wastewater treatment plant at Te Kauwhata, please say yes. It'll be great to have more community members come along to see that.
Okay, how do, so they just get in touch with you?
Yep, get in touch with me if people are interested in going. It is in Te Kauwhata.
Yeah, okay. And the, all the council and community board members' contacts are on the council website.
Oh, and I hope everyone has seen the fantastic new mural down at Papahua that Dallas Mahinui and Jason Massent have done. It's so awesome with all our sea creatures, and a big thanks to the Raglan Community Board, particularly to Ross Wallace, who, you know, agreed to fund that mahi. So that's awesome.
Okay, and that which building on down at Papahua is that?
Where the basketball quarters.
Oh, the changing rooms.
Yeah, the changing rooms okay. On the Ruki Kōrere side, the skate park side.
Okay, so yeah, if you go to the skate bowl, you'll see it then yeah. And look back at the building, you'll see it.
Yeah, all the happy little sea creatures.
Awesome. We've remembered one other thing to talk about. Let's talk about it. What's the Water Tower project?
The Water Tower project for the muralling of the Water Tower.
Oh, so this is the big tower on the hill by the
this
BP.
This is the big tower on the hill
which by has the received BP. A bit of graffiti, and someone decided to blank over with grey paint.
And that would be our anti-graffitis. And yeah. So we, the Destination Management Organisation has umbrellaed that project, and we're really lucky to have the fantastic Jacqueline Anderson project managing that. So watch this space. We've also confirming our independent advisory panel who will sit over the implementation and the choices of those who will put in expressions of interest. So we've got an advisory panel made up of community members and key kaumātua from the community. So we're just confirming that. So watch this space. We'll be able to put out more information on that. But just know that the Water Tower is a project and it is going to happen.
So this is for people, eventually people will be able to come forward and say, I want to paint this design.
That's exactly
it.
Right. Put forward their expressions of interest, their designs, their how they're going to do the project, how they're going to manage it, and budgets and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's awesome. It's exciting. So watch the space.
That's good, because I haven't heard anything about that, but I've been wondering, looking at the Water Tower,
it looks
going,
really
needs
sad.
Some help at the moment.
Yep, so yeah. That project is well underway.
Yeah. All right, Lisa, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, back to the music, back to Keita with Dig Deep.